Welcome to the When Bearing Witness podcast. This podcast is an invitation to explore trauma-informed storytelling, a safe and healthy process of gathering and telling painful stories. It's hosted by me, Maria Bryan, a career storyteller. I have long believed that storytellers play a crucial role in making the world a better place. For a brief moment, I was introduced to the concept of trauma-informed storytelling, and it changed my life. Join my conversations with trauma-informed experts and social good storytellers as we help shape the intersection of trauma-informed care and the storytelling process. Stories are sacred, and we can create safe spaces to tell and share them. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today, we are talking to a kindred spirit of mine, Diana Ferias Heinrich. She is a nonprofit storyteller and marketer, and she's the founder of Abra Marketing. Her consultancy is rooted in bringing equity into nonprofit marketing and fundraising through informed consent. I'm so thrilled to bring her on to walk us through her guide to informed consent conversations. This is a crucial part of trauma-informed storytelling. Diana, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you on.
I'm so excited, Maria. Thank you for having me.
So we met not too long ago, and I learned quickly that you authored the Informed Consent Conversations Guide, which is so important, such a key part of trauma-informed storytelling. So I'd love for us to talk about that. What inspired you to create a guide with such great guidance on informed consent conversations, especially in the context of nonprofit marketing and fundraising?
Well, like a lot of us, Maria, I learned it the hard way. I learned it the hard way. And when I first started as a storyteller, one of my very first assignments was to write stories about these 10 young women who had won college scholarships. And they were moms, and they had been through so much, and they had won these scholarships. And so it was awesome to like get to write their stories and their bios and publish these in all the places, right? Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, the emails, sharing them at the luncheon fundraiser, and just all of these different things. And the fundraising campaign was great. Everything seemed well and good. But a few weeks later, I was eavesdropping on some colleagues of mine, and I overheard them talking about one of the girls who had won the scholarship. And I heard them say that she had been involved in a domestic violence situation. So I am an advocate for survivors of domestic violence. Immediately, I get this pit in my stomach because I know that everything that I had published about this young woman was online, her first name, her last name, her kid's name, the location of the program she was attending. Mm. And so I did what I could in that immediate moment, which just to take everything down that I could. So I backtracked weeks of social media posts. I took her picture off the website and her story off the website, you know, all of that sort of stuff. They kind of left me with this question. There has to be a better way to do this. I should have known about this. And that really was, you know, the painful inspiration behind diving into this world of informed consent. And because I found that it was such a key piece of my role as a storyteller, and because I'm so process driven, I knew that it had to be baked into everything that we did as a nonprofit. And so that's really what got me into just the research. And then over years of kind of putting this into practice and working with my colleagues, then turning it into a guide that is really a tool for people to use to start changing their storytelling process now.
What sticks with me are those little mistakes that I've made, those like painful things that I've done that really are the guiding light for how I strive to be trauma-informed as a storyteller. Mm.
Mm-hmm. So what's beautiful is it didn't just change the process for you, but you're like, okay, let's do something about this. Let's create this guide. So let's dig into a few elements of this guide. Y'all really need to download this guide. It is something that I will be using here forward when I am especially interviewing to gather painful stories. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things you talk about is the prep work, having a good understanding of the client's background and gathering important information. Can you tell me a little bit more about that step and why that almost pre-work before the interview is so crucial for having informed consent conversations?
Yeah. One thing before I get into the answers, I just want to point out that I think that all of us as storytellers have these cringe stories because when I talk about it, people will tell me, oh yeah, I did this. XYZ happened, or I heard about this. And so this is not an isolated incident. This is like an industry, you know, like nonprofit sector wide problem that we need to address. So just to say, it's like, we're not alone, but we can do better. Yeah. And part of that is really understanding and empathizing with where our clients are as the ones being interviewed, as the ones who are sharing their story publicly. And so this is the first step in the guide, which is preparing for the conversation. And as a marketer, as a communications person, as a development person, you need to know up front what it is you're going to do with the piece that you're publishing. Where are you publishing it? For how long are you publishing it? Is it a piece that you're going to pitch to Good Morning America? Mm-hmm. Or is it a piece that you're going to use in a mailed fundraising appeal? Where is it going? Because if you don't have that information up front, you're not going to be able to fully inform the client about what it is that they're getting themselves into. And one question or one key aspect of getting the client's background is building a bridge with the people who have those deep relationships with them. So that might be the, you know, the direct service staff, the counselor, the case manager. It might be any of those folks who have that direct relationship, because whereas, you know, the development or communications folks, one step removed from their day-to-day lives. And so for me, the interview actually starts with that person and not with the client. And one of my favorite questions to ask them was always, is there any question or topic that I should stay away from when I interview this person? And another question I would say, would you like to be present, or do you think that, you know, our client would like for you to be present, because that's totally doable. And so really getting them to open up first and to kind of share about their clients, to then be able to trust me as the interviewer to know that their client is going to be in good hands, and that, like, I'm not going to re-traumatize them, at least not, you know, that I'm conscious of making sure that that client is in a well enough place mentally to tell their story.
I think we often worry that our program staff, our social work staff, those really, really in the field, don't need one more thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I have found it to be quite the opposite. They are the most fierce advocates of the clients and our direct beneficiaries, and they want to be involved. So I so appreciate that that's part of it. It's not just you and the person that you're interviewing, but there is this bridge, there is this liaison that you have in place, especially if you work in the nonprofit space. And talking to journalists and videographers also, and if you don't have that mediary, look for that mediary. Look for someone who is introducing you to this person that might have a little bit more background. That due diligence goes so, so far. And I would also say to that, let's slow down the storytelling process to allow for that due diligence. Like, maybe we're not telling a story every 3 weeks, a new client story. Maybe we need to stretch that out to just a few a year So we can sit down with our program staff and have those really, really important conversations before the interview even takes place. Mm-hmm. And again, I love that original story that you told, as unfortunate as it was, because how could you know that one of your scholars had this experience? And maybe the program staff didn't know either, but you really don't know what you don't know. And that's like, you just can't assume when you're interviewing someone that you know anything. So any background information that you can get, I would imagine, would just set the tone for creating a safe space.
Exactly. A safe space, a place where, and even let's say, I don't know, for whatever reason, you don't have that liaison, or sometimes I call them the gatekeepers in storytelling terms, but you know, you can also ask the client, right? And that actually is baked into this informed consent conversations process, is to ask mm-hmm. the client through what I call this, what is called the stakeholder test. And right. I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit.
Yes. Diana, tell me about this stakeholder test, one of the very first parts of the interview process you have.
Yeah. So let me give you a little bit of background about where I learned about the stakeholder test, and that it comes from an article published by Save the Children called The Practicalities of Informed Consent and Development Photography. And I will give that as homework to your audience to go Google that and read it, because it is really the foundation of everything I have since learned about informed consent. And the stakeholder test comes from that article. And it's authored by I don't want to get her name wrong. And I literally have it right here. One sec.
Yeah.
Nabila Idris is the author. And so in the guide, she writes, a stakeholder test is basically a question that puts the piece that you're publishing into the context of your client's everyday life. And I would add to that an effective stakeholder test takes into account the client's cultural background, their relationships, and their everyday life. So a stakeholder test, for instance, we already know that we're going to publish our piece on a TikTok. For instance. So I might say to the person I'm interviewing, you know, we're going to publish this video on TikTok. If your friend saw it, would they think it was cool, or would you be a little embarrassed by it? Or, you know, we're going to post this as an ad on Facebook. If your, you know, mother-in-law saw it, would she, you know, what kind of reaction would she have? Would you still feel proud to see your face out there? And so really it's like, okay, what is going on in this person's life? And how could I put this piece that I'm publishing into that context, into the way that it's real? Because I've heard of people whose stories have been out there, have been published, and they find out about them after the fact, from an acquaintance or a friend or a family member, and their face is out there and they don't even know about it. And then by that point, it's too late, because once something is out there, it's out there. You can't take it back. You can only do so much. And so that is what the stakeholder test is.
And I want to underscore something about what's so crucial about this stakeholder test. And that is, we have for so long have felt like consent is so black and white. It's just that form that you sign. And sometimes we consider that form a program participant signed 6 months ago when they entered the program, that we can use their video and audio and likeness, and that's it. Or even if we do, you know, the due diligence of have them filling out a consent form, just saying, yes, I agree to tell this story and you use it where you seem necessary. It's just not enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what a great way to paint the picture of where this might end up mm-hmm. when you say, okay, you're going to tell me this story and it might be very personal. You're going to be very vulnerable. If your neighbor saw it, how would you feel? Mm-hmm. If your mother-in-law saw it, how would you feel? And giving that person a moment to absorb that, and then to make that choice on like, yes, I'm empowered by this story and I want the world to know it. Or, oh, now that I'm like really thinking about it, like I'm picturing it now, I'm not comfortable. Do you have any advice on like what happens if you're ready for the interview and they're like, you know what? I don't, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't want to share my story.
Oh, I say, okay, don't worry about it. It's all good.
Right.
That's your choice.
Right.
The key about an informed consent conversation is putting that choice in their hands, a yes or no. And the guide goes into a little bit more detail about it and at the places and where you insert that question, like, you know, do you still want to do this interview? Do you still want to share your story? It's okay if you say no. You know, and just saying that out loud, it's okay if you say no, puts the power back in their hand, because there's so much power dynamic at play when you're talking to a client and getting their story and then publishing it. Because, I mean, if you kind of think about where they are in their life, they've been receiving services from your organization for who knows how long. And, you know, depending on the service, it could be something that is still, you know, something that they're going through, or maybe it's something that they've overcome. And that's where, you know, that's why you have to do your homework before you've even chosen, you know, who is going to be your storyteller, right? Who's going to be that person that is going to publish their story? Where are they in their lives? And that's where, you know, that bridge, that liaison with the direct service person is so important, because you have to understand that upfront. Where are they with their life? What topics should you stay away from? And being aware that, you know, they might ask, or we might ask someone to share their story. They might feel obligated to share it because they might think, oh, you know, they've done so much for me. What if they stop my services if I say no? Or, you know, it might be the other way around where they think, yeah, I'm so excited to share my story, but they're still very much going through it. And maybe they're not fully prepared to process their story publicly, right? Where there's a potential for comments and negative feedback, or, you know, any number of things. And so either way, it's, you know, putting the question out there, or putting the statement out there, that permission to say, no, it's okay if you don't. Nothing will change. You're still going to get services. We still appreciate you. You know, everything is fine. Don't worry. I've had that experience with people before. And I always see a wave of like relief, you know, like, oh, okay, I didn't have to do this. And then that reaffirmation of it's okay for you to say no, that's fine. Because how often, I mean, in our general lives, do we get that, right? We go through, like, I can tell you, like, as of today, I've probably signed, or like, you know, clicked cookie buttons and like privacy things, and you and I are recording, and, you know, we decide things in the moment without necessarily thinking about the future repercussions, because we want something right now. So what does a client want right now? They might want to please, or they might not want to say no, or whatever the case is. You know, they want to do a favor for, you know, the person who's helped them so much. But it's our job as the interviewers, as the publishers, to make sure that we put all of that into the context of their everyday life through something like a stakeholder test, and within the context of a full, you know, informed consent conversation.
This episode was made possible by DonorBox. Let's be honest, social impact storytelling and fundraising is hard. DonorBox is in your corner to simplify fundraising for you and giving back for your donors. Transform your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your process, elevates your donations, and ensures a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Create captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly track donations, and automate receipts. Joining is a breeze, with no setup or monthly fees and no contracts required. Explore the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org today. DonorBox, helping you help others.
One thing that I think about are the reactions we have to trauma, which the most physical, behavioral, are the fight, flight, and freeze. But then there's also fawn, which is a more social, emotional response. And that response is one of wanting to please. Mm-hmm. And so we can interpret someone being excited to tell their story as them being willing and able. It might actually be a trauma response to please and wanting to interview, even though they might not quite be ready, which is why with every question, before you even start the interview, after the interview, and we're going to get to handing back the mic in a minute, which I love, just continuing to give that permission mm-hmm. and to give that space. And even to say like, hey, it's no big deal. Like, it's no big deal if you can't share your story right now. We love your story. And if it's a good time, 3-6 months from now, that's fine. And if not, like, we still love you. And we still are just so thrilled that you've been like part of our program and like, you know, in our circle. So
it's just about, I think it's just a matter of just showing respect for someone, you know, holding space for their privacy and their dignity. And you mentioned about like creating safe spaces. And one of the things, you know, when you are having an informed consent conversation, which you can also think of it as, you know, the interview is part of that. And in the interview process of, you know, making the thing go both ways. So not just being the one to ask all the questions, but also to say, this is who I am. This is my role within the organization. This is what I do on a day-to-day basis. And letting that person get to know you a little bit. And, you know, maybe you share your story about why you decided to work at that nonprofit organization, for instance. What's your connection to it? Because if you have someone that sits with you and they've never met you before, they were just told, hey, you have to do this story or something, which is kind of the way that it works now for a lot of folks, then there's no safe space there, you know? So okay. It's kind of like just taking it back to like basic, just manners, just being a person and like a human and showing that right. That's what you are too.
Right. Like, human first.
Yeah.
Flow with one another, mm-hmm. which is like easier said than done. I know when you're a storyteller and you're balancing so much, but it's worthwhile. You know, I would love to explore a little bit more of these power dynamics that you're talking about as a white, straight woman. It's something that I probably should be thinking about more. Definitely didn't think about it to its full extent when I lived in Ghana, when I worked in Chinatown. It's something that we need to very practically consider, especially those in nonprofits, because you're exactly right. There's a good chance that you don't have the same life experience, social, economical background, racial background as the person who is telling their story. And oftentimes that means there is this power dynamic imbalance. So how can we navigate this dynamic? And I'm sure the first is just being aware of it. Like, let's just be honest. So let's like not pretend we're colorblind. Let's be honest.
Let's look at, I mean, what is the power dynamic of you know, a nonprofit that is giving services? We talked about it a little bit. If I'm someone who is receiving services from a nonprofit and they ask me to do something for them, I could feel obligated, you 100%. Know, and that's most of the time, that is the power dynamic, right? There is something that I'm giving you that I could potentially take away if I wanted to.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I'm going to, but to just say it out loud, I'm not going to do this if you say no. Right. And literally spelling it out for someone out loud and not assuming that they know. And then saying out loud that you have a choice in this, that puts the power back in their hands. And I think most of us probably can assume, those of us listening or to this, is that we probably are in a position of power. And you know, okay, so given that I'm in a position of power, what are all the different things that I can do to create a safer space? One, invite, you know, their direct service person to be there with them, or a family member. I've done that too, especially in the case of children or, you know, young adults, like, who is that support person for them? And even if somebody shows up for an interview and they don't have a support person, would you like to invite someone? You know, in the pre part of the interview, you can bring someone if you want to, you know, feel free. And, you know, it's that consistent question of, you know, you can say no, you can say no. It's all good. Don't worry. And I'm sure there's more, and they'll come back to me later, Maria.
You have given us so much. I mean, it doesn't have to be that complicated. It's nuanced, but it doesn't have to be that complicated. And sometimes it is as easy as, like, if you're thinking this, let's just put it out there right now. Like, nothing will be affected. Like, your services won't be affected. Yeah. Also, maybe another thing is, like, maybe you're not the right person to be interviewing them. So maybe you pass those questions on to someone else in your organization. Maybe it's saying, you know, maybe you're more comfortable with a man versus a woman. Maybe you're more comfortable with someone who in some way or another reflects who you are.
The key is to ask, right? The key is to ask, because I think the thing that power does is it assumes things about other people and other situations. So the best thing that you can do if you don't know is to ask. Like, when I was confronted with, you know, I didn't know about this, you know, young woman's background, the history with domestic violence, but I never thought to ask, is there anything that I shouldn't be publishing about, you know, any of these young women? That question was never in my mind. And, you know, if that question now can live with folks who are listening today, like, that's awesome. If that's the one thing you take away from this today, awesome. Because it'll give you that pause that you were talking about earlier to give space for these questions to be asked and to be answered. And I think there's one thing that I, at least as an interviewer, sometimes felt uncomfortable asking questions. But at the same time, I also have to remember that the person who's sharing their story is also uncomfortable. Honestly, it's an uncomfortable situation altogether.
Yeah.
And okay, well, you know what? Let's be uncomfortable together. Let's ask the questions and share the answers and give the permissions to say yes or no. And, you know, when we wrap this up, which an informed conversation, I call it a conversation because it's really ongoing. After you've interviewed someone and after you've written their story or created their piece, you know, the last step in the process is to pass back the mic. And that looks like sharing the piece with the person, the piece that you're publishing before you publish it, and saying, asking them, is there anything that you want to add, edit, or delete? People will have told me, change this. I had one young woman, I worked with her for many years. Throughout her journey, I wrote about her several times. And in this last particular piece that I wrote about her, she had finally, like, you know, graduated college, and there's this beautiful picture of her son giving her a hug. And, like, he had this cute little sign that said, I'm proud of you, mom, or something like that. And so I wrote her story, and it was just so amazing to see her trajectory. And, you know, I had written her story so many times before that I didn't think anything of it, but I wrote it. And I sent it to her and I said, hey, is there anything you want to add, edit, or delete? And she said, oh, this sentence about my parents. She says, it makes it sound like they were super unsupportive when they found out about my situation. And she's like, they were, like, uncomfortable, but that it wasn't like that. Like, they did come around. And I said, oh, thank God I asked you. She even said, I wouldn't want to share this with my parents. Right. And at this point, she and I had that kind of relationship because we'd had this conversation so many times, for her to be able to say, Diana, that I'm not comfortable with that. And so I, you know, I changed the sentence. I edited the sentence. We published a story. She was happy to share it. She was proud of herself. Her parents were proud of her. You know, her son was proud of her. I was proud of her. Everybody was happy. You know what I mean? But that one little key step of saying, is this how, you know, you want the world to see you? are you okay with all of these words, all of these choices that, you know, I had made as the writer? You know, are they true to you and true to your life? And that particular sentence was not true. So I'm grateful to have learned this process, to have, you know, and now to be sharing this process.
That story is such a testament to creating a trauma-informed and to strive for a safe space, that she had those words in your head that you already had with her. Like, Diana would probably ask me if I would feel uncomfortable if my parents would see that. Like, she already started thinking about that during that review process. And I just love that so deeply, that you have developed this process that people that are familiar with storytelling with you and story gathering with you already feel at ease to very quickly say, actually, because I'm sure there are people that would read that and just be like, oh, I just would feel awful telling her that this one little thing is off. But you've been able to develop that relationship with her where if it's not true to your story, if it's going to hurt people you love, and if it's untrue, there is like abundant space for us to change this and make this right.
Yeah. And you know what? It reminded me of another story on the opposite end of the spectrum, where there was a young woman who, you know, was telling her story on the stage. She had won an award, and, you know, her speech was being live streamed on Facebook, and her boyfriend saw it. And she talked about him in her story. And there was conflict afterwards between them because he didn't appreciate the way that she had told their story. And the thing is, she didn't do it with any sort of like malintent. It was just that there was no pre-prep. There was no like, okay, you're going to say this story out loud on stage. We're going to live stream it on Facebook. Are you sure this is is this how you want to represent your, you know, the people right. that are closest to you?
Right.
You know, and that's part of, you know, the stakeholder test too. Are there specific pieces of content, particular stories within the story right. that are representing other people, and how might they feel about it to be talked about too?
There's so much in there. There's so much in there. It's like it's not only are you willing to tell your story, but also, okay, you can tell my story and send it maybe in an appeal or a newsletter, but I don't want it on a billboard. Or I want to tell the story in this closed space, in this room with these people, but I don't want it live streamed because I don't want my boyfriend to watch it, you know? And I don't say this with frustration. I say it with like, I do say this with love and kindness and empathy, that just these little things make such a huge difference and can prevent that those kinds of things. And I think this is a good way to kind of wrap up our conversation. We've had a few cringy stories, and thank you for being vulnerable and sharing them. And I have a ton of them too. When people listen to this podcast and people read your guide, they're going to think of all the moments in their storytelling journey and their storytelling role that's going to make them cringe, that's going to make them put their forehead in their hands like I just did as you told that story. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say to people who cringe when they learn something new and how they can do something just a little bit differently?
To paraphrase Maya Angelou, when you know better, you do better. And I think that, you know, part of all of this is a process. First and foremost, this guide is a guide to a process that I developed over many years of messing up and making mm-hmm. mistakes. And I'm still not perfect. And no, neither is anyone else. And that's okay. As long as we try to do better with the new information we have, this is going to get better, as you know, as all of us nonprofit professionals, it will get better. We just have to try. And the other thing that I will say too is that it can often feel overwhelming to start up a process like this, especially within organizations that demand a lot of storytelling, that, you know, are constantly looking for grant reports and social media posts and all of these things. And I know, I remember that, you know, as a communications person, I often felt that like pressure to like produce, right? And there didn't seem to be a whole lot of time to stop and breathe. But if you make the decision not to do this alone and to involve your colleagues with you and to get educated together, putting this in as a best practice becomes so much easier. And then everybody is on the same page. And then taking a pause, does it become a question? It just becomes a matter of the process. It's just a process. And, you know, you reiterate on the process and you make improvements and you make mistakes and then you make more improvements. So that's what I would just say, you know, give yourself a bit of a break. You have new information, put it into practice and get yourself a buddy or two and turn it into a best practice, because you can totally do it. I did it, so you can totally do it too.
Diana, what part of your role as a storyteller are you most proud of?
I just, more than anything, I'm just proud of the people that I'm interviewing. I'm just proud of them. I'm happy for them. You know, and with the people that I've interviewed, I've either shared very, very similar experiences or very similar backgrounds and things. And it just makes me happy for other people to just see them, how far they've come. So it just makes me proud that I get to even get to know them, because they inspire me. and that's really what it's about for me.
Well, I am so grateful for your work and you carving space for these bold and sometimes difficult conversations on informed consent. I know people are going to want to connect with you and learn more about you. Tell us more about your work and how folks that are listening can connect with you.
Yeah, so with my agency at Abra Marketing, we, you know, help nonprofits with their communications, their marketing, and their storytelling. And that's really what it's all about. We know that, you know, the executive directors and development directors out there are just like wearing 10 million thousand hats, and we just want to help them hang a couple of those up. And so, you know, you can find more about us at our website. That's abramarketing.com. That's HABRA marketing.com. Abra means there will be, and there will always be marketing, especially if you're trying to raise awareness for your nonprofit. And so you can go there and you can learn about us, and you can also sign up for the newsletter and download your guide to informed consent conversations, so that you can start using it now.
Great. Well, we will have those links in the show notes. Thank you again for being in this space with me today and telling us so many beautiful stories. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of When Bearing Witness. This podcast was produced by our friends at Rustic Roots. They are video storytellers passionate about sharing the impact of nonprofits. From story ideation to beautiful and powerful videos on screen, they've got you covered. Get in touch over at rusticroots.co. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please do subscribe and leave a rating and review. And remember, your role as a storyteller is making the world a healthier, safer, cleaner, and happier place. Thank you for bearing witness. Until next time.